Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah, podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live from our studios at Meat House Fork. This week, the New Orleans Saints had one of the most unusual games that I've ever witnessed in my entire life dealing with the New Orleans Saints. And they went in and played the Denver Broncos without any quarterbacks. It was ridiculous. I don't know how I feel. We're going to bring in Heath Elsenson. We're going to discuss it. There's a part of me that thinks, hey, man, a win is a win. And yes, it's not part of me. Most of me feels a win is a win. But there are some other extenuating circumstances that make me a little bit uncomfortable about this game. And we'll talk about it. But the New Orleans Saints now at 9-2 and put the Saints in the driver's seat in the NFC. So we'll bring in Heath Elsenson. We'll talk about the Saints game. We'll talk about the playoff implications. So grab a drink, sit back, and relax, because for the next hour or so, we're going to be doing the New Orleans Saints and the Dome Patrol Network BS and Beer style.
BS and Beer Podcast, the worldwide leader in absolutely nothing.
All right, let's bring Heath Elsenson in. Heath, I don't even know where to begin with this game. Quite frankly, there's so many directions I want to go. I don't know how we're going to come up with a good, a bad, and the ugly. But the first thing that I think I want to start the conversation with is, how do you feel about the idea that while the NFL was definitely trying to drive home a point about safety with the virus and wearing their mask and the PPE and all that, that they created a very dangerous situation for the Denver Broncos by their best running back injured in the game when you're allowing a defense just to basically tee off on you?
Yeah, I'm not really sure how I feel about that, to be honest with you. I've seen the opinion. A lot of people think that the NFL just basically screwed Denver over. This whole COVID thing, dude, I'm trying to keep my own personal feelings and emotions about the severity and the seriousness of this thing and all, yeah. But I know the NFL is trying to do their part with pushing the message. It's a tough situation. That's all I can say. And I didn't want to see the game postponed over that. Certainly not, you want to talk about stupidity with the COVID thing in football. How about the Saints getting fined and losing a draft pick over not having their mask on in the locker room or whatever it was after they just spent an entire game spitting on each other and sweating on each other and everything else?
Right.
I still don't quite understand how every player on the sideline can stand around without a mask, but if that coach doesn't have his mask on, he gets a fine. So I don't know. Honestly, I just can't wait for this season and this whole COVID thing to be over, because this is just crazy.
Did you see there was a video that was going around Saints Twitter, and what it was like the quad box with four different NFL teams partying in their locker room without masks.
Right.
So we'll see what happens if the NFL goes ahead and fines those teams, takes away draft picks. But it does seem just and quite frankly, listen, whatever side you come down on the COVID thing, there are some things that people are doing that are just obviously silly. You around the players the entire week. You might as well, you don't play the game, but the coaches are right there. And somehow or another, the players don't need a mask, but the coach does. And, some of the stuff is just – it's obviously silly. And I think there are a lot of things that are being done that are just for the sake of sounding like you're trying to do something. And that, to me, the whole coach and the players and the mask thing seems exactly that. It's like, oh, hey, everyone, we're gonna have all the people over at a grocery store wear plastic gloves. Well, they don't change the gloves. The gloves get contaminated, and now every grocery that you get has whatever they have on their hands on your groceries. Right. But yet they continue to do it like, and if you don't have your gloves on, you're going to get fired. And exactly. It just like it's kind of ludicrous.
It is. And, you know, the bottom line is in my opinion, the relative lack of issues in the NFL with COVID is kind of proof to me that, you know, probably don't need to be doing as much of this stuff anyway. Because in all honesty, considering the situation, the NFL, when they're practicing together and they're in a locker room together and then they play in the game and they're sweating and there's bodily, there's bleeding going on, there's all kind of stuff going on. Yet there's been a relative small amount of positive COVID test. Let me go, not only positive tests, which we know doesn't always indicate active disease in somebody, right? So the number of actual people getting sick with COVID in the NFL, to me, kind of proves that all of that's not quite so necessary. But we'll leave it at that, because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that disagree with where I stand.
No. Yeah. What's funny is as you're talking, I'm just sitting here like, oh, careful, Keith, careful.
Yeah, I'm trying to be as diplomatic as I can. But anyway.
Well, now, speaking of that, you actually created a good transition here. Armstead sent out a tweet, and it simply had a picture of, I believe, not a picture, but emoji of someone wearing a doctor's mask and someone emoji of, I think, maybe a thermostat in his thermometer in his mouth. And I think the implication was pretty obvious that he's actually sick. So while we've been getting people who are sent away into the protocol, and bear with me as I stumble through all the terminology, but they weren't actually sick.
Right.
It looks like Armstead may actually be sick. Have you seen that?
You know, I haven't, but I have no doubt that some people are getting sick. I'm not suggesting that the disease is phony and nobody gets sick. What I'm saying is I think the significance, the rate of spread and how serious healthy people are going to actually get sick and whatnot. I think Armstead is going to about have like the flu, you know what I'm saying? But no, I actually wasn't aware of that, but it's going to happen at some point.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. It's obvious, but I do agree with you. The percentages of the NFL players and the microcosm of the people in the United States, I think it's much less. Now, that may have something to do with there's two issues. One, it might have something to do with the fact that the NFL has implemented all these procedures and we don't really realize how seriously they're taking it, as to opposed to, you know, half the country's just running around doing whatever they want with no regard to COVID, whether they're right out in the streets with no mask, or they're going to a grocery store with no mask, or just taking no safety precautions whatsoever. So whatever the situation is, it'll be interesting to see if Armstead will be available for the Atlanta game. And based on that one meme, I'm kind of thinking that he may not be. And honestly, now you have the big breakout with Baltimore. Now, again, how many of those people test positive? How many actually come up sick? So we'll see. But the thing is, I'm imagining that not a lot of them came up sick because they're playing the game on Wednesday night.
Right.
So if all those people who tested positive, and this, again, not a doctor, but it starts making you question things. All this week, we had guys coming up positive in Baltimore with COVID, but yet within 5 days, they'll be playing a game. So I just, you know, like everything that I understand and read, it just, none of it makes sense. It's just not, it has no, help me out here. There's no straight line. There's no that this is a problem. This is what happens. This is how, it's just everywhere. It's all over the place. So we're going to do this for 5 days. We're going to do this for 14 days. If you get this, we're not going to do that. And I'm not talking about just the NFL. I'm talking about in everyday life, you know? So someone gets sick at their job and they're sent home for 2 weeks. If you test positive in NFL, well, you're playing on Wednesday night.
Right.
So there's multiple
layers to it. There's guys that test positive and then they have follow-up tests and they're negative. and then they're cleared. And then there's guys that test positive, but they never really get sick. We already know that a positive test does not necessarily mean, and in fact, I think in most cases, it doesn't mean active illness. I see. And so you have that, and then which ones are actually sick, and then what's realistic time frame for them to be beyond the point where they're contagious or whatever, and they can come back, and everybody has their own medical advisory board, and these people all come up with different determinations depending on who you're talking to. Yeah, so it's a moving target. True. There is no one thing, you know.
Well, since we hammered this controversial issue, let's move on to the next controversial issue, and that's Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill, in his first start against Atlanta, looked great. Actually, much more accurate than I think most of the critics thought he would be, including myself. I just hadn't saw enough of him to say, you know, I felt like he could be accurate, but he proved me wrong. He was a lot more accurate and decisive. He looked like, and I personally said that, hey, Taysom Hill went from a question mark in my mind to a guy who obviously has enough tools to work with to be a starting quarterback in the NFL, maybe even a very good starting quarterback in the NFL. And then after the game, or maybe I should say during the game with the Broncos, brought up a whole bunch of questions. Now, people will criticize anyone who says something negative, or if you already feel negative, then you'll criticize anybody who thinks something positive. And sometimes it just makes me laugh because there's nobody who can just look at it. You either have to be right or wrong. He has to be awful or he has to be great. Right. The fact of the matter is, I think what he is if anything, and we'll get into the actual game plan and what was said about it, but you're talking about a quarterback who has one NFL start. And if you think that he's just going to have a great game against Atlanta and then just constantly build from that and only get better until he becomes a Hall of Fame quarterback, then you're probably mistaken. I think it's been said by some of the brightest quarterback minds that it takes 30 games for a quarterback to be fully integrated, right? Fully right. Ready to go. And I think that, you know, Taysom Hill might be ahead of that curve because of his NFL experience, because of his maturity, working with people like Drew Brees. But having said that, I do think that he took a little step back. Now, having shared my personal opinion, let's get into the, I don't know what to call it other than the narrative that's being spun that Taysom Hill was doing exactly what he was instructed to do, and he played the game just like Coach Payton said it should be played. He start off and give me some thoughts.
Well, you know, like I said last week, he was going to have ups and downs. There's no doubt about it. I didn't quite expect it to be as down as some of what I saw yesterday. But we do have to remember, just like you said, this is a guy that was on his second NFL start. You know, maybe you give him credit for another game or two because of all of the passes combined in the past that he's completed and all. And, you know, but still, this is a guy who hasn't started very many games in the NFL. And you know, you can't expect him to come out and play great every game. Now, as far as, you know, yes, generally, I think the game plan was, look, let's come out, play defense, play conservative on offense, don't turn the ball over, and we're going to be able to win this game because Denver can't do anything but run a wildcat, basically.
Right.
So from that standpoint, yes, I absolutely agree. However, I don't think the game plan was, when we do ask you to pass back, to drop back and pass, stand out like a statue and take a sack, you know, or not so much, you know, take a sack, don't throw the ball up for grabs to get rid of the ball because you don't want to take a sack. But what I'm talking about is you could see that clock in his head is not where it needs to be, right? He's dropping back 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, you know, and he's still standing there and then he takes the sack. And then to make matters even worse, you know, you look at the replay and you see a guy that was standing in front of him wide open and he could have dumped the ball off and he just didn't see it. Or to throw the ball into double coverage multiple times, you know, one of which it got intercepted, is his first career interception, I believe. But so that part of it was not the game plan. And so, you know, I think that's just, you know, coach speak, you know, I don't really mind it so much because, like I said, he's going to get better, and it's not really that surprising that he, you know, he didn't play the same way this week that he did last week.
Yeah, and I'd agree with that. And again, you know, I kind of criticize fans out there for it's got to be he's either amazing and whatever you saw was just part of the game plan, which to me is just ridiculous. And that's really the point I'm trying to say. And to think that someone coached him up to stand there and take sacks, then throw the ball into triple coverage, miss some screen passes, it's just ridiculous. Having said that, we can also take a look at some things that show us a growing curve. Against Atlanta, there was not very much pressure at all. And a lot of that has to do with you had the left side of the offensive line, specifically Teron Armstead in the game. This week, he had a backup left side of the line. I feel like the pressure got there quicker. Now, keep in mind that Coach Payton probably gave him overly strict instructions not to make mistakes. So I get that he's like, hey, I'm just going to eat this. I'm not going to force anything unless there's a guy wide open. And now at this point, I'm kind of repeating what you're saying, but I also believe that what we saw is a young quarterback who may not, when the pressure was on him, meaning the pass rush, that, you know, he was a little bit slow to make decisions. And so that is a little bit, I don't want to say concerning, but that is more evidence of just youth and inexperience. So if we thought we were going to get the guy who was just ready to be an all-pro quarterback, I just don't think that there's still more development that needs to happen. And that was, again, to me, a prime example of it. Because while we have an easy schedule ahead of us, relatively speaking, you take out Kansas City and there's not a lot of tough games on the schedule. Once you get to the playoffs or if you run into a good team, they will put a pass rush on you that makes you think quicker, makes the clock move quicker, and you have to be able to make quicker decisions, quicker reads. And again, because I don't want to get an inbox full of hate mail, is I don't think this means he's a bad quarterback. It just means he's a young quarterback who's in need of some more time in the pocket where things are going to slow down for him. And when that pass rush comes, he steps up, he reads the field, he knows where his second read is, and all these things start coming together for him that it just didn't feel like it did against the Broncos. So, you know, yes, I do believe it was a combination of Payton emphatically emphasizing they cannot beat us unless we hand them points.
Right.
Having said that, that doesn't mean you need to stand in the pocket and take sacks. And then at some point, there was the series where he threw the interception. I somewhat get the feeling that maybe he got frustrated and just said, yes, I am going to throw the ball downfield and make a play. I just have to make a play. And so he threw in a double coverage twice and then threw an interception. And so that to me just seemed like he was determined to make a play, whether it was there or not. So, and one more thing I'm gonna add on this too, when we talk about game plans, some of the things that we talk about, Payton literally may have pulled out the preseason playbook and said, look, there's no point for us doing anything creative. We're just going to run some ins and ups and combination routes. And they just weren't getting open. So all of a sudden Taysom pulls a trigger on something to just, maybe you felt it as a follower of the team that you were just getting frustrated, right? Come on, Saints, make a play, right? I mean, is that fair?
Yeah, no, it's completely fair. It was difficult to watch early on, especially. I found myself having a hard time paying attention to the game. I had other things going on, and I'll look up, and I didn't miss four or five plays or whatever because I wasn't even staying focused on the game.
Absolutely.
Because it was just as ugly what we were seeing on the other side of the ball, right? It was like you just watched them try to have an offensive series that was so ugly, and then the Saints turn around, and you expecting the Saints to just be able to run right over the top of them, and then, you know, they're having a three and out and a couple of ugly plays, I think the other thing with Hill right now is that we're not just evaluating him on these games that he's playing while Drew Brees is hurt, right? We're also looking at it from the standpoint of whether this guy is the future at quarterback for the Saints. And so I think people are probably looking at it a little more critically because of that than they would be if he was just coming in to play the Teddy role from last year and fill in for however many games Drew Brees is going to be out. And so, you know, when we see him in a game yesterday, boy, you know, or this past weekend, you go, oh, you know, This doesn't look like the guy, man. How's this guy going to be the guy that's going to take over for Drew Brees next year? You know, how's he going to get that much better between now and then? So that's where my criticism might come in is, and I've kind of been beating this drum since last season, that at what point are you going to make him a quarterback only and say, okay, you know, it's a lack of reps, right? What we're seeing
sure, is that has to be a
guy
part
who
of
has
it.
A lack of quarterback reps. Well, he could have a whole lot more reps right now. If last year when you said that you thought the replacement was in the building and then you gave him a 20-something million dollar contract, at that point, I was calling for him to go ahead and be nothing but a quarterback from that point on. And so, you know, will that matter in the end come next season? Well, maybe not, right? He's going to play however many games it is, you know, hopefully it's going to be not into the playoffs, that Drew Brees will be back and Taysom won't be starting at quarterback anymore. And then he'll have a whole offseason, you know, and hopefully it's a more normal offseason this time than it was last year. Well, he'll have plenty more time to look at him and evaluate him and you know, and for him to get the reps in. But from the standpoint of these games here, you know, at the end of the day, winning is the only thing that really matters right now for this season until we get Drew Brees back. And so, you know, probably need to look at it a little bit less critically when you tighten the scope down to just that.
No, and I think you make a great point, Heath, is it's hard knowing that Drew Brees is – I mean, they had to talk him into coming back this season.
Right.
So it's almost a foregone conclusion that he is gone next year, and you're not just looking at Hill as like, oh, is he a good enough backup? Yeah, absolutely, no question. But now there's not only the pressure of being a good backup, which I think, listen, it's obvious he is. He's a good backup, okay? So is he a starter? It's obvious to me that he has the potential to be a good starter. Well, now here's where the unfair part comes in. Is he good enough to be a Hall of Fame quarterback and replace the guy who's leaving? And right, that's right. What most people are judging him on right now. Right now, right. They will expect him to be Drew Brees. Maybe not quite Drew Brees, but I promise you, people have gotten to the point where their expectation is if you get the ball back with a minute and 10 seconds down by four, you're going to give us a shot to win the game at the end. And I do not know if Taysom is there yet. He has not yet played from behind.
Right.
So again, is he capable of it? We have no idea. So I'm not sitting here saying he's not good enough to do it, but I'm also not going to tell you he is good enough to do it because he hasn't shown that to me yet.
Right.
So what happens when he gets behind and the Saints can no longer run play action pass and they're down by 10 points and have to actually throw the ball? Is he capable of doing it?
Right. Well, like you said, we don't know. I don't know that he can, but I also don't know that he can't.
Exactly.
All I do know is as Saints fans, we're all kind of trying to avoid the reality of the fact that no matter what it is, it won't be Drew Brees, right?
Yes.
No matter what he turns out to be when he replaces Drew Brees, he won't be Drew Brees. And so, you know, we don't want the drop-off, right? We've gotten used to the Saints being good now throughout the entirety for most of the Peyton and Brees era. And we remember, those of us that are old enough, remember the Saints before Peyton and Brees. And we don't even want to think about the possibility of going back to that, right? We're all thinking about that, man, can we be Green Bay? Can we come up with our Aaron Rodgers that followed Brett Favre, right? Which doesn't happen very often, right? And so I think we're looking at anybody, whether it's Hill or whether it would be Jameis playing right now. Actually, we'd probably be even more critical about Jameis right now because he was the number one draft pick at one point. And so you know, we just want that guy to come in and be enough of Drew Brees that we don't have the big fall off and wind up picking a guy with the first overall pick because we were so bad that's how we find our next franchise quarterback.
Right. And after the way some of the guys are playing, and I'm going to throw out Carson Wentz as an example, you know, you don't want to be that next team. I mean, how about that for a second? A guy that, I mean, the year that they went to the Super Bowl. Now, obviously, you don't get to the Super Bowl just because you have a good quarterback. You have to have a good team around you.
Right.
So that team was very good. And Carson Wentz, though, looked like the next all-world, unstoppable quarterback. And then he got injured.
Right.
And he has literally been garbage since then. Now, last night on Monday Night Football, Now it's like we have Tuesday night football, Wednesday night football. I have to remember which day of the week it is that we're watching football. When I was watching the Monday night game, they did show how guys weren't getting open. So the idea that somehow or another you're going to pull somebody else off the bench and he's going to do better. And I think the Saints are proving that in the inverse, meaning you have a great team. You pull Drew Brees out and the team doesn't fall apart. The team is still good. Matter of fact, I made this point during 49er week. 49ers are a Super Bowl level team. Just because they lost their best pass rusher, yeah, they're not going to have as great a pass rush. They lost their quarterback, but they still, now they lost a lot of other guys too. But my point is that if you think you're just going to run in there and run roughshod over their defense because they lost Bosa, or that their offense won't be able to run the ball or do some other things effective just because they lost their quarterback, that's, you found out it's just not true. It's a good team that doesn't have the elements to put them over the top anymore. But that just shows that Philadelphia is just, they're just not a very good team. And a matter of fact, listen, I was trying to figure out where to segue into this. It is hard to talk about the Saints game because, one, it felt like a preseason game. It felt like the fourth preseason game where you literally just trying to get off the field, just get out of the game without getting injured. And so I'm a transition, talk a little bit about that NFC East because it may be the most ridiculous thing that I've ever seen in my life. The Cowboys, correct me if I'm wrong, 3 wins, and they're still talking about them. And they don't – they. Matter of fact, somebody on one of the national shows went as far as saying, forget about the records. Like, they want us to forget that they're 3 wins. They're one game out of first place in the division. I don't care. I don't care. You're awful. You're bad. You shouldn't even qualify for the playoffs.
You're one game behind another awful team for the division. You know, what does that mean? That means nothing, you know. I mean, I'm not sure what the record is for the worst team to ever get into the playoffs as a division winner. I want to say it's maybe, what, 7 games or something like that? I don't know. I don't know if anybody in the East is going to get there or not. But they're starting to make a really strong case for this idea that you don't get in automatically as a divisional winner. You just take the top teams no matter where they come from. You know, there's two ways to look at that. You know, well, you totally negate the whole purpose of having divisions in a way. But, you know, as the NBA does it that way, right? They just have conferences and then it's the top eight on each side or whatever. They don't break it down further into divisions.
Personally, Heath, I like the idea of having divisions, but I would have a exception rule if you don't have a winning record. So, you know, if you're not 9-7, you don't make the playoff, and then it defaults to the next best record regardless of division. Yeah. Now, that would solve the problem, right?
It would, yeah. That's a good idea. You at least got to have the 6 wins to get into a bowl game in college rule, you know. In other words, if you can't make it to a 9-7 or, okay, even 8-8. But, you know, I agree. I would think 9-7, man. If you don't have a winning record, yeah, you don't need to go, because there's going to be several other teams in other divisions that didn't win their division that are going to have more than 9 wins that are going to get left out, you know, as it is. And so, no, I like that. Yeah.
You add to that, and it happened to the Saints where then you have, like, this is ridiculous. And again, there should be a benefit. I don't want to lose the rivalries, listen, on Sundays when the Saints are playing on Monday night, the games that I'm most interested in, regardless of record, is what Tampa Bay's doing, what the Panthers are doing, and what Atlanta's doing. And I don't want to lose that, right?
Right.
But I think that there's something that says you shouldn't get a home game. A team with 7 wins should not get a home game over a team with 11 or 12 wins. There are certain things that are just ridiculous, and it needs to be fixed. So yes. I think that you can do it the same way. But like the best analogy was your college football analogy. You don't make a bowl game if you don't have at least X amount of wins. You don't get a home game unless you are over 500. And again, I don't have as big a problem with a team with 10 wins hosting a team with 11 wins because, you know, sometimes just how it happens. And quite frankly, the difference between a 10 and 11 win game, season or team is usually not that much, right?
Right, right.
So it's just the idea of having these losing teams, losing records, even hosting playoff games, which will happen this year because all this stuff we're talking about is not in place. And one of the teams in NFC East will host a game probably with no more than 5 wins against a team with 10 or more wins. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I think that's a great idea. We should submit that to the NHL. Yeah. We should submit that for consideration.
I'm going to write the letter. We'll sign it and we'll send it off. All right. So I don't know. I don't know where to go from here. The good, the bad, the ugly. We usually do that. I mean, I just don't know. It wasn't a real football game. And now here's something I think is interesting. I mean, do you disagree with me? Do you think that, like, I'm even going to the point where I'm like, the statistics are skewed. Like, it was not important to me so much as I like to see that the Saints, because historically, if you have a top 10 offense, a top 10 defense, that says a lot about you, right? So yeah. Now the Saints, if I'm not mistaken, I didn't look it up, but I heard they were third, but I thought they were third going into the game. So I have a hard time believing that you give up 110 yards in total offense and you don't move up in the rankings. Now, again, it's divided over the course of what are we at now, 10 games or 11 games. So it's, you know, it's not that much. But believe me, sometimes when you really look at these statistics, the difference between the number 5 ranked defense or right. offense and the number 20 is like 7 yards a game. It's not, it's not significant. So my point is that, you know, you're going to have the Saints are now going to be ranked number 2 in defense and number 5 in offense. And are they really, you know, here's another thing. We were talking about Hendrickson, you know, as much as we're talking about, we stomped them and everything. They threw the ball 9 times. Hendrickson didn't even have a shot at getting a sack. Right. Although Cam Jordan got one.
Yeah. Well, no, I agree with you. You know, so obviously this was a bit of a gimme game, or maybe not even a bit, maybe a lot of a gimme game. But the bottom line is I'm going to still say that the defense is good enough because the defense did what they should have been able to do in a game like this, right?
Yes.
Considering how well they've been playing over the last 3 or 4 weeks coming into this game, and then considering that, you know, when you play, I'll go back to the college analogy again, when you have an Alabama playing I was going to say 1AA. They don't call it that anymore. Whatever the subdivision is, you know.
Right.
They should win. If they win 72-0, then you still got to say, okay, well, they good because they did what they should have been able to do. So for the Saints, you know, there's two ways of looking at this, right? You could say, well, Denver was one-sided, obviously. And so you would expect the defense to be able to play really well and shut down a one-dimensional offense. But then on the flip side, you can look at the Russians specifically and say, okay, well, yeah, we knew Denver was going to have to run the ball pretty much all the time. But it's still saying something for them to rush the ball 30-something times and still not be able to get 100 yards total.
No, hey,
you
listen.
Know, you know what I'm saying?
So, I agree with you.
That's still saying something. You go, oh, yeah, but it was one way. You knew what they were going to do. Well, yeah, but you still lined up against another NFL team and over 30 rushes, they still couldn't hit 100 yards. Now, and that's saying something. So
do you believe that there may have been some type of gentleman's agreement? Because while they weren't great, I didn't see the Saints locked up man to man and 9 men on the line of scrimmage. Do you think that there was some sort of gentleman's agreement where the Saints said, hey, you know, we won't do these things, somewhat like a preseason game. We won't do this or we won't do that. And in other words, try to have your players play as honestly as possible, maybe not run blitz or like we'll only do this on third downs. I don't know if that's the case. I have nothing to lead me to believe that except for, like, I just have a hard time believing that maybe Coach Payton didn't call up their coach and say, you know, hey, listen, you know, what if we just do this and try to run this game out as quickly as possible? Or do you think that Denver's thinking to myself, no, hell no, we're going to beat you?
You know, that's a great point, and I hadn't really thought of that. It would not surprise me at all if there was a verbal gentleman's agreement or even an unspoken agreement, right? It certainly looked at like the Saints kind of played it that way, right? You're right. They didn't literally pull up everybody and put them in a box, which they almost could have.
Right.
And so, you know, yeah, that's a great point. And that's completely possible.
Yeah. I just saw a lot of situations where when I did see a guy flashing in there, and I watched the game again on Monday, and nothing. I'm okay now, but I kind of dozed off, hit my head on the corner of the desk, but when I woke up, I kind of realized that watching the game, that there were times when I'm like, why are they 6 yards off the ball? why aren't they in the gaps? Why aren't they? And I started thinking, that's where I came up with that thought. It's like, I don't know if I wouldn't have done it. And now you might say, listen, this isn't the preseason. A win is a win, and I get all that stuff. But at some point, I truly believe, as good as the Saints are against the run, that if they would have just played run every down, locked up in the man defense and just played the run, that they would have they could have tackled them for losses on 2 out of 3 plays.
Well, and that's the flip side. You know, the flip side is that the Saints came into the game tied for the all-time record and now own the all-time record for not allowing a 100-yard rusher. And so maybe Sean Payton came into the game and said, look, our run defense is good enough anyway.
Yes.
That I don't need to do anything special. And if nothing else, it may be a combination of the two. Sean Payton probably said, I'm going to sit back and see how the game goes. And if I have to, I can always dial it up, right?
Right, absolutely, yeah.
Depending on what they do. You know, we still have to at least respect the fact that this guy might be able to roll out and throw one down the field and get behind us if we don't, you know, if we just sack the box constantly.
Right.
And so, you know, yeah, I think he came in and said, I'm going to let my run defense start out. I'm going to play it vanilla. And, you know, if they're able to start moving the ball, we can always tighten things up and see how it goes. And he basically just never needed to.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Second half, if you need to, you just didn't, okay?
Right.
And then once the Saints start wearing down the Denver's defense, then all of a sudden they were running the ball and you know, keeping the defense off the field. And now there are times where I do not believe the coach goes to the players and says, hey, take it easy on them. So there were times when I guarantee you there are a guy like Alexander or Davis that just said, you know what, I'm shooting this gap. I see it coming. I know it's coming. And I have a 99.8% chance of it being right. And you just can't, you can't tell them not to play hard, you know? So, no. But there were times, there was one time where Alexander shot, Davis shot and hit and just lit up the running. And I mean, I was feeling bad for these guys. You know, it's like, you know, I mean, you know, yeah, you got to play hard and it's a game. And then they're coming up and they're doing the dog walk and they, woo. And I'm just like, man, I didn't know how to feel about it. You know, it's like, you know, and I'd like to say too, and I can't even remember the kid's name. I wrote it down and left my notepad, in the office. The young guy that played quarterback, and you have to I just want to respect him and say, you know, listen, let's look at it from a different perspective. How does this guy feel as someone who would have probably never really made a difference on an NFL field to one day, it was not much difference if you would have gotten the call, Heath, and like, hey, Heath, we need you to play quarterback in the NFL. Now, if you're willing to take the beating, you don't need to know the playbook. We'll go over a couple of things on Friday. And and you would – I mean, can you imagine this guy's walking out? The only difference is he walked out to an empty stadium, right? If there had been 80,000 screaming fans, he'd be telling his grandkids about this. Yeah, oh, yeah, yep. I completed one pass and 2 interceptions, but, man, I'll never be able to – you know, I'm in the history books.
Yep. Yeah, he's in the history books, but maybe for wrong reasons, only completed one pass or whatever. But, yeah, you know, it was a completely thankless job, you know. I'm sure it's mixed emotions, right? On the one hand, it was great for him. He went from being in a sales job recently to getting called up and put on a practice squad, then now all of a sudden he's playing quarterback in the NFL. But on the flip side of that, like you said, he got his ass whooped in an empty stadium. And he's going to be an asterisk in the book of completing one pass in the game or whatever. So, you know, it's you know, such is the life of an undrafted NFL journeyman type guy. But, you know, look, it's a memory for him, I'm sure. You know, I'm sure he wished he'd have been able to do a little bit better. But, you know, I'm sure it's still a great thing for him.
And, you know, Heath, it's like, okay, who's another guy who doesn't really play much, isn't really a football player, an NFL kicker, right? But when you go out there and, like, you know, you don't get out there much and you finally get out there to kick a 42-yarder for the game winner and you shank it, your team doesn't go up and be like, yay, buddy, good. But you can see those guys like, hey, man, thank you. They were like, you just got lit up. We did the best we can, but you were getting slaughtered out there. And, you know, you're going to be humiliated. You're probably going to be the focal point of countless memes with, you know, you'll be a running joke for the rest of your life. And we just want you to know we appreciate that, you know. So they didn't have the same attitude of like, come on, man. You know, you're killing us, you know. And I kind of appreciated that. You could see him give him the old shuck slap on the head like, you know, you're doing your best, buddy. Nobody expects anything from you.
Did you see the huge grin he had on his face when he completed that one pass?
They
re-showed it, and it, you know, it was just like – that was a moment, you know. But –
All right, so let's switch gears, and this is really – I'm struggling here, Heath. I'm trying to talk Saints football, and quite frankly, I'm struggling. But let's talk a little bit about the future here. So the Saints are the number one seed in the league right now. They lead Green Bay, who has the head-to-head advantage over the Saints, but the Saints have a whole game on them.
Right.
Now, looking at Green Bay's schedule, the games, and I don't have it again. I took all these notes and left them in the other room. So, the two most difficult games from my perspective left on the Packers' schedule is the Titans, and then they also have a game against the Panthers. And I think you can make a good argument that may not necessarily be a tough game. They do have a game against the Vikings, and the Vikings already beat the Packers.
Yeah.
The Saints, I would say, should be the favorite in every game they play, with the exception of the Kansas City Chiefs. And but here's where we run into problems, is that if the Saints happen to lose to the Chiefs, which is, you know, not inconceivable, one of the things that I worry about is that, you know, Taysom Hill can get on a nice little streak and play well, and then Drew Brees comes back. He's going to be the starter. But if Drew Brees comes back, let's say, the week of Kansas City, you know, remember back to game week one and week two when Brees was not sharp. So does he come back ready to go, or does he come back needing to knock some rust off? And if we end up losing that game, that puts us in a tie with Green Bay. And again, Green Bay has the head-to-head. Now, before I bring you in to get your thoughts on all this, the other thing that I found interesting, that is the Saints have the advantage, assuming they lose to Kansas City, they have the advantage of, if it's a three-way tie, the Saints are the winner in that scenario, meaning they would be the number one seed, which means that another team has to be in a three-way tie with essentially a 13-3 team. So last night, Monday Night Football, we had the team that I think might have the best chance, Seattle, but even Seattle has games against the 49ers, the Cardinals, and the Rams. So I don't know. It's a big mess, but I'm a little worried about this situation, because I don't know if there's a team left out there that's if Green Bay manages to beat the Titans, I don't know if there's another team that can beat them.
Yeah. That seems eerily similar to last year, right? First of all, I'm sick of Green Bay, you know, and one of the reasons I say it, number one, I don't like Aaron Rodgers, but number two, I did this last year, right? The whole way down the stretch last year, I kept thinking to myself, Green Bay is just not that good. They're just not that good. And I kept going, they're going to lose a game, right? Or they're going to lose more than one. They're just not that good. The problem is they have such a weak schedule. And I don't know how they keep winding up with these weak schedules, but it's like, it's the same thing again this year. And so I'm looking at what you're looking at. And while I think the Saints can beat Kansas City, that's going to be a tall challenge, especially, yes, like you said, and you know, and it may even make it worse, because it's going to be right. It could be right on that pivot point of Drew Brees coming back.
Right.
And just like you said, you know, his first game, you know, I guess it's really going to depend on where Drew Brees is in the week or two before that. How much work is he really getting in, and what does he look like heading into that week? You know, is he really rusty? Is he literally just rushing back and he hasn't been really throwing the ball in it? So, you know, it's going to depend. But if that's the case, you might be better off to just let Hill go ahead and start the game, considering, you know.
Right.
I don't know. That's going to be a tough call.
Well, okay. I agree with what you're saying per se, but then, okay, then that means bringing Brees back when he's, you know, not ready to go against a team that we are now going to need to beat, whoever that team is after Kansas City. You know what I mean? Whoever it is.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of talking myself. I've said all along that Drew Brees will play again as soon as he's ready. And I think that'll probably be true regardless of whether he just starts throwing the ball the week before the Kansas City game. He'll play. Exactly. And I think that's probably the best scenario. He gives you the best chance in pretty much in any scenario. And you're right, it's a critical game. And so I'm sure he'll play.
Yeah.
That said, if they are to lose that game, you know, I agree with you, man. You know, the Titans is the only game, and I don't know where that game is. I didn't look whether the game is in Green Bay or Tennessee.
Well, it doesn't matter without fans. I mean,
the Titans have been playing really well, and they're playing well on the road or at home.
Well, okay, so my opinion of the Green Bay Packers is, as much as I don't like Aaron Rodgers, he is a very good quarterback. The thing about their team is, unlike the Saints, you can lose your starting quarterback with the Saints and you still have an outstanding team that's hard to beat. I think that Aaron Rodgers is the team, is Green Bay. Without Aaron Rodgers, that team is a 500 team, if that much. Yeah. The thing about it is that he makes up that difference. Now, that's why if you can get enough pressure on him, if you can somehow take him out of the game, that they don't have a lot of other things to go on. That even the defense, their defense is not great. And this is, again, a matchup against the Titans. They're not great at stop and run. They are completely built to play with a lead. They're completely built to get after the quarterback after Aaron Rodgers gets on top of you. So my point being is, we're definitely not the same Saints of week two. Our pass rush is dramatically improved. We should be, unless something happens, any unforeseen things, we should be completely healthy on the defensive line. We didn't have Davenport. Hendrickson obviously wasn't playing the way he was playing now. Our defensive backfield was not playing as well as they're playing now. And we still, if you remember, we're a Taysom Hill fumble away from having the ball going down to tie the game up. So I think things change. I think if the Saints play the Packers, I'm not as worried. What I am a little bit worried about is playing in Green Bay in the playoffs. So you just don't want that environment. You want a better environment to play that game. Although, I don't know. Hey, let's make the argument. The Saints, much better. If you forget where they play, forget who they are. If you just look at the build of the Saints team versus the build of the Green Bay team, which one is a better team to play outdoors? There's a much better defense, run defense, running team, or the team that just passes the ball and rushes the passer? Which one's the better team to play out?
I agree. I agree with you. The Saints have really changed in that way over the last few years. The Saints used to be a team, boy, you really had to worry about them playing outdoors. You didn't want them to have to go to Chicago at playoff time or Green Bay or hell, I think it was Wesley not long ago pulled up a stat about how good the Saints have been.
Yes.
Outdoors. They're one of the better outdoor teams over the last year or two. And so, but that perception is still in the mind. Well, they're a home team. We don't want them to play. And on the flip side, the Saints have not been that great at home recently, right? Home hasn't really meant a whole lot, especially without fans in the stadium and everything. That said, I still want the number one seed. It's not so much worried about playing Green Bay. I agree with you. I think we're a better team than Green Bay. I think we could beat them. We could have beat them last time as poorly as we were playing at that time.
Yep.
And it's really just about, again, still in the mind, wanting to have that home field advantage, that number one seed.
Maybe even more, Heath, is the first round bye. You get to rest some guys up.
That's a good one. Yeah, with only one team now. That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yep. So that makes that number one seed even more important. So unless you have anything else, I think I've struggled through enough to try to fill up a show. You have any final thoughts?
Just a couple, Cook's continued disappearance and really de-emphasis now we see with the snap count and everything. And at the same time, the emergence of Troutman. Touched on him again last week, and it's good to see him going forward. I don't expect Cook to be on the team next year, considering his salary and his production and his role and the emergence of Troutman. He's just one of a handful of guys that I'm kind of expecting to be cap casualties with the reduced cap.
Well, Heath, let me jump in real quick, and because you're leaving some perspective out. Troutman had, the notes. Was it 28 snaps to Cook? Had 16 or 18? So he had significantly more snaps. And I know it's just – what I think is, whether it was the last two or last 3 weeks, Troutman was actually the Saints' highest rated offensive player.
Yeah. I think it was the last 4 weeks or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Depending on what you believe in the, what is it, Pro Football Focus.
Well, right. But the point is, they're not so far off that the guy hasn't really been playing horribly and they call him the best rated offensive player. There's no doubt that he's coming on. Don't get me wrong. I'm not penciling him in for a Pro Bowl or anything anytime soon necessarily, But he's definitely ascending, and Cook is descending. And when you take into consideration his cap number and everything, I think Cook, along with, you know, now not so much because he's not playing well, but there's a handful of guys like him and Emmanuel Sanders and even Thomas Morstead, who's another guy who's kind of seems to be on a downfall here lately with
yeah.
You know, he's has not been punting well, and he has a big salary for a punter going into a reduced cap and everything. We can get into that into the future if you want to. But yeah. that was over, you know,
Did you just sneak in a bad there, Heath? And
I guess I kind of did, yeah. I guess I did. A good and a bad simultaneously. Cook bad, Troutman good.
Good. All right. Yeah, you couldn't go. It's just we've been doing it so long, you couldn't go without it.
It's ingrained. I just couldn't let it go.
All right. Well, anyway, you've been listening to the BS and Beer podcast. So for Heath Elson-San, I'm Dave Romero, and we will talk to you next week.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back.
And that's the way it is.
Everyone is a so dumb, miss. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Oh, we have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Oh, boy, don't waste time.